heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
It's been building and building and building. We've seen a lot of this through the Obama years with Ferguson and all of that fire up and racism and claims of all kinds of things. But things have started to settle down in the first part of Trump's term. And the only thing we were really talking about is things like, you know, how do we impeach him out of office? And the guy was meddling with Russia and sleeping with foreign enemies and, you know, just the gentle stuff. That's all we've been talking about. We're kind of distracted, I guess you might call it here. Maybe those were the good old days when all they were talking about was Russia collusion, huh? Which really brings me to the problem of all of this. And so what you're seeing right now, the problem, and it's all going to come back. All roads are going to lead back, as far as I'm concerned, to the media. I think that's where it all leads to, people. I don't think this leads anywhere else. We can almost deal with all of the other factors here, but it's the media. It's how the stories are being reported. It's what people are seeing on their television screens. And that really is the catch-all of what's taking place. Because now you see what's happened in Minneapolis is gone way beyond that now. You see the Chaz Zone or whatever it is in Seattle. And as they've taken that city, that market hostage now. But now from Seattle, it's gone over to Portland. You see, Portland's another, that's another explosive area that you're going to see take right off. In fact, they're trying to seize that Portland area and do the same thing they've done in Seattle. And frankly, many of these West Coast cities are in a heap of trouble for one reason or another. And that is the other problem. The other shoe we'll talk about today is really what I've been saying to you for some time now. It's the collapse of America's great cities, the decline of our urban markets. I've been talking about this for years now, and I've seen it coming. It's sadder than sad can be, because here's the thing. We run around talking about making America great and what that really means, or keeping America great as well, and how do we really do that, right? Well, I got a bulletin report for all of you here. You cannot do it unless you have great cities, you see, because there's no way to have a great America. So we can run around all day and talk about making America great and how wonderful it looks, as the MAGA movement does, but it's not really possible, people. It's just a fairy tale, because your cities are declining, which we have been reporting about and talking about. And it's because they keep electing these far left lunatics. I don't know what else to say, call them, and still be polite and keep it a family conversation, you know? I mean, they really are. They are the socialists, and that's what you've got here. I believe you've got it's pretty clear as day to me now. You've got the Democrat Party being hijacked, but you've got this major takeover of socialism, but it goes beyond that to Marxism. And I mean, you've got full-blown out communism coming in, and you've got the Marxist and radical groups and the terror groups taking advantage of this. So now you've got, it's more than a trifecta. I mean, this thing is loaded on top of each other, and it's explosive. People are taking advantage, and there are a lot of outside actors that are coming in here to play in all of this, and you're seeing it climb. And now look at Nashville. Nashville's having a lot of troubles there. You see Atlanta now. We see what happens in Atlanta, burning the Wendy's down. And of course, if they don't get their way, they just start burning things down and, you know, having a tantrum, you know, like they're 3 years old. They didn't get their way or something happened. So what you've got here now, it's, you know, what they're classifying and qualifying as police brutality is really just trying to keep the streets safe. And of course, if these criminals don't want to be shot, whether they're black, white, brown, yellow, or whatever, I know they always try to make it about racism, but it really isn't about racism, but that's going to be the card here they'll play consistently. I mean, if you look at Atlanta and what happened there, he takes the office's taser there. And the police are chasing him, and he's running away after this scuffle takes place. And so what's happening is there's no respect at all for law enforcement. And obviously, but the flames are flaming here, and they're burning high because you see everybody's seeing these screens, the television screens, or back at home watching the stuff. The kids are. And they see how the media is reporting it. And pretty much, well, I don't know. I'm going to guess maybe 90% of the media is absolutely flaming this thing to no good. I mean, they're calling it, you know, all kinds of things, reckless about the police. And this is, see, this is really what feeds, I think, the community uprising. This is what feeds the whole problem. It is the real problem we have here. I mean, beyond the fact that many of you are electing fools to run your cities and states, that's another problem. But the president, I'm going to tell you right now, has got to be careful. And we talked about this on Viewpoint, actually, on the weekend, and we discussed this. And you remember the statement even Michael John said, if you listened in there. That was a great show, by the way. And he come out and, you know, he said, listen, we got to be careful with that red line. And he was right. We'll talk to Dr. James Mitchell just after the pause here.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
So again, I draw for you the red line. And here's the other thing. When I'm talking about the red line in Trump and again, this crazy mayor, Jenny Durkin, who the president quickly points out appropriately, that's part of the love fest that a lot of Americans like about this president. He tells you exactly what color it is. You know, most politicians don't do that, but we really don't know what percentage like that. I mean, I'd like to say the majority, but I really don't know because there's as many people that hate that he does that. Well, to finish that red line up, he says this, the president, he says, so look, the governor has to call out the troops, do what he has to do, has to call out the National Guard, the president said. He has to do something. Now, this is Jay Inslee he's speaking about, okay? He says, because you know the problem with what happened in Seattle. Well, he says it right here. It spreads. The president took the words right out of my mouth. There it is. That what happened in Seattle will spread. And all of a sudden, they'll say, let's do some other city. Well, they're already doing that. I mean, that's not a stretch at all. It's happening. We're not going to let it happen, he continues. There's another red line he draws, you see. We're not going to let it happen. So timing-wise, hey, we're all set to go. You know, there's another red line right there. We're watching the process, but the most amazing thing about the process is how the fake news media doesn't want to cover it. Now, boy, he hit it all right there. Now, I didn't read that before I just read that to you. I just copied it in here so I could take a look at what he said in that report. Hadn't read it before I just said it aloud. And he said the same things I said in the opening remarks. How do you like that? Yeah, you knew it had to be good. I hadn't read it prior, but you just know the president's going to hit the mark with that stuff. Well, joining me here on the program is Dr. James Mitchell. He's a PhD in clinical psychology, served 22 years in the U.S. Air Force, retired as a lieutenant colonel. And again, you know Mitchell best because he did, as I tell people all the time, develop the CIA's Enhanced Interrogation Program. And his book, Enhanced Interrogation, you've probably read that or seen that out there as well. But I like what I like about Jim having him on is he's just a man of good common sense and can look at these kinds of problems and give us something to think about. And that's what we need to do here, people, on this program and all of you out there in the Voice of a Nation. We need to think about these and then we need to take action. So, Jim, let's talk about this red line. I think the concern I want to start with is the red line. The president has drawn several of them in the last day or two here. Again, this is after just before the weekend, he was saying he's going to do something. But he keeps saying that in posture. And in the meantime, the mayor and the governor really don't give a damn. She's looking for a summer of love. And the governor is, he's just toast. He hates this president. And they're out to sabotage him in every way they can. We're seeing that coast to coast. Where's the danger, the tipping point with the president, do you think, Jim? Where's the, I mean, do you see my point about these kind of verbose statements when you put them out there and then you do nothing and another many days go by and a week goes by or 2 weeks go by and it kind of does some damage, does it not?
Well, if what you're expecting him to do is to send in the Marines, it would do damage. You know, but there's a lot that the federal government can do and may be doing, you know. There are several ways to approach this problem, and I'll be a bit of a contrarian in one way. Now, my instinctive response to the idea that a bunch of hooligans have fenced off eight blocks of one of our major cities and declared it an autonomous zone and established their own roving mob of people who are armed with, in some cases, high-powered weapons and burning and looting, my instinctive response is, send in the SWAT team, send in the cops, get those guys out of there. But there's an entirely different way of doing that. Okay. It's entirely possible that the president has advisors who are saying, hey, this thing, it's a little bit like a hostage situation, right? It's a little bit like a hostage situation in that the longer it goes on, in some ways, the more likely it is to end peacefully if the sides don't arm themselves. Now, let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. They want us to storm that section of the city. They want us to send people in. They want to get pictures of police and SWAT teams and National Guard and military folks dragging protesters, and they want to spend that. But what if instead of doing that, you simply fence that area off, cut off all the water, cut off all the power, cut off anything going in and out, and said, you want to be autonomous? Be autonomous. And you did nothing for them. You essentially laid siege to them. No one could get in. No one could get out until they were willing to come out, identify themselves, and then you prosecuted them in a federal thing, in a federal court, for those people who have done the most egregious things. See, in my mind, it's not always the case that you should do the obvious. And part of that is based on an experience I had when I was a psychologist working on a locked ward. We had a person, if you'll bear with me with this story, we had a person named Millie who would go into other people's rooms and steal their towels. She would steal all their towels and take them back into her room. And it was making the staff crazy. And they asked me, what can you do, Dr. Mitchell? I mean, we've cut back on our funds to go to the cafeteria. We've done all these sorts of things. It doesn't seem to help. And I said, the problem is that you're coming up with the solution and she's not. She has to be put in a state of mind to want the solution that you desire. So I went in and I said, Millie, it seems to me that you are very concerned about having towels available. So what we're going to do is we're going to store the unit's towels in your room. And we filled her room completely full of towels. Mm-hmm. Right. And so after a while, she started bringing them out in the hall. We started putting them back in and we'd say, Billy, we're concerned. We're concerned because you need those towels in your room. And then eventually she said, please just get them out of here. Just get rid of the towels. I'll never take anybody else's towel. And she didn't, right? And that's kind of a paradoxical way of responding to it. As long as we were in this sort of push me, pull you sort of thing where we were trying to get her to not take towels and she was trying to get towels, she was willing to fight us. But an entirely different and somewhat innovative approach would be to fence those folks off and let them just suffer until they were willing to come out on their own. Now, that's not my first response because I was in the military,
right.
and I'm an old white guy. My first response is send in the cops, clear it out.
Right.
But it's entirely possible that you could do this with no violence at all.
All right.
As long as it was them wanting to come out.
A couple of things here is, you're wearing a couple of hats right now, and I like that about this problem we're talking about here. You're wearing the psychological hat, which is always a great hat to wear, and you're wearing the military hat and then law and order hat and all of that. That's good, Jim. That's good. But here's the thing. Back to the response of cutting off the power and all of that and the idea, which I think is a very good idea. And by the way, it makes me think I had a list of supplies. They have demands. They're given to the mayor and the governor and others, and they have a list of supplies. In fact, I wanted to share it on the Viewpoint, but I did not have time on the weekend. And it was a whole long, long, long list of things, and things like, I mean, all kinds of stuff on there, Jim, like cigarettes, lighters, drinks. I mean, it was like a party fest. It was like an invitation to go to the party store. They're going to have some sort of a festival. And that's a list they actually had publicized and requested all these items, which is extreme to what you're saying. But now you're saying, I mean, the fact that's the opposite of that, because you're saying, well, let's not give them anything. Let's cut off the water supply and electrical supply. But who would do that? Would the mayor do that? The governor? Do you ask him the president to do that? Who would be the
It would have to be the mayor.
Of course. It's not the president can't do that, right?
No, the president can't
do that.
And in fact, the only way I think that the president could intervene directly over the objections of the mayor and the governor is with the insurrection. Mm-hmm. Act. And I don't know that that would be a good idea.
Because it's going to pit them against some very, you see, Milley came out and talked against, in fact, the media made a lot of hay out of that when he went over to the church, and Milley was in part of that group that was walking there. And he came out and said, well, I shouldn't have done that. And he said that from the point that the military leaders are supposed to be, you know, apolitical, Jim. You know, it wasn't said as a derogatory message to the president at all. In fact, I seen the follow-up talks he had, and he was very supportive of the president. That wasn't the point. But I got to tell you, every damn report I read about that incident showed, and every headline showed, that Milley was in the face of Trump and they were disputing each other, had a spat. And that wasn't all the case that happened. None of that happened, Jim. You see, they just lied to everybody. See the problem?
We shouldn't be surprised about that. The whole notion of Black Lives Matter as a movement, as a political organization, is based on a lie.
That's it.
And the lie is that white cops disproportionately kill black offenders or people that they have contact with. But there's about 50 million police civilian contacts every year. And of the 50 million, somewhere around 10 million result in an arrest, and somewhere around 1,000 results in somebody being killed, mm-hmm. you know? And so when you look at those statistics, and particularly when you break it down, what you see, and there's an excellent study called an empirical analysis of racial differences in police use of force by Roland Fryer. When they look at that, what they see is that that white cops are most likely to shoot white people, and they're less likely to shoot blacks. It's blacks and Hispanic cops who are most likely to shoot blacks. And in fact, a white perpetrator has a higher probability of being shot and killed than a black perpetrator under most of those circumstances. Even when you adjust for population and for the circumstances that it occurs in, mm-hmm. you know, blacks account for some, I don't know, 15% of the
right.
population most of the time, mm-hmm. but they account for about somewhere around 50% of the of the crimes. And so when you look at that, the notion that Black Lives Matter is based on the idea that it's open season on young black men being killed, well, it is, but it's from other black men. You know, the highest probability of a black person being killed is by another black who's not a cop. And that is like somewhere around 57 for every million members of the black race. And so what we have to do is, one thing we have to do is put out real statistics that and not let them get by with this lie, not let them continue to perpetrate it. It's entirely possible for us to say, I do not agree with the movement Black Lives Matter. I don't agree with the political party Black Lives Matter and their desire to take over the thing. But I do believe, like all lives, that Black Lives Matter. You don't have to endorse and kneel and give money to a specific political party, which I think is beginning to take on the tenets of a domestic terror group in order to prove that you object to, you know, anybody being killed. And when you look at that last killing that occurred where in the Wendy's parking lot, that guy turned around and shot that taser at that cop. When that guy started running, lots of cops are killed. In fact, a cop is 18 times more likely to be killed in service than a Black person they're arresting. And so when that guy, people run away from the cops and they turn around and shoot at them and then they keep running, right? Cops get killed that way. If you turn, and that cop, when that guy was, he was chasing that guy and that guy turned around with that taser and aimed it at him, didn't know whether that guy had pulled a gun out of his pants. Exactly. He didn't know whether it was a taser or wasn't a taser. And he didn't know what would happen if he did get hit by that taser other than he'd be incapacitated and that guy would be in control of him.
Right.
So in my mind, it's easy to call that murder, but we weren't there. I don't know that I wouldn't have shot that guy, to be honest with you. If he'd have turned around, pointed something at me, pulled the trigger, and that had seen the, you know, seen some sort of a light, I probably would have shot him.
Yeah, I don't agree. I don't think it is easy to call it murder. I don't see it as murder at all. I don't agree with that statement. I don't think it was murder. Just because the mayor said that doesn't make it so. And the fact is, these cops are trained, Jim, as we just said. They're trained to defend themselves. I mean, they have to. If somebody's pointing something at you, what do you expect them to do? The thing I question that I know they're trained also to shoot for a part of the body that completely stops the incident cold. But in that particular case, with back to you talking about the white and the Black, and the cop knows that the instigator, the criminal, is Black and he's white. Why do you think he didn't shoot for his legs and not kill him? What's the purpose? I mean, why not just shoot? Why shoot in his back and kill the man? Do you know the answer to that?
Well, I was trained by both the military and the agency to shoot. And you have a muscle memory. And when you pull your weapon and you fire your weapon, especially when your heart's beating at 100 miles an hour and, you know, you've got sweat in your eye and you don't know what's going to happen next, it is very difficult to overcome that muscle memory. Mm. It's a little bit like a tennis serve. And I know that some people will be angry because I made such a benign reference to it, but it's anything that takes over by memory. If I pull my weapon, I'm going to shoot center of mass.
I see. Right. That's center mass. That's the term. Yeah,
that's what's going to happen. Right. I'm not going to think, oh, I'll shoot this person in the leg.
Right, so they're trained to shoot center mass, basically, I think, right? That's part of the training, isn't it?
Well, I don't know how that specific policeman was trained, but I'd be surprised that anybody that was trained in a firearm wasn't trained.
That's right. They are. No, they are. I'm certain they are. And so I'm sure that's the reason. Now, maybe that's part of the reform they need to look at. I don't know. But the other things they're talking about doing are insane that they want to reform. And it's already taken place in New York and other cities. What we're setting ourselves up here for, Jim, is just more criminalization. It's going to be interesting ahead when they look back. And because there's going to be a lot of reform for police right now. A large percentage of the population are demanding it, just like they're demanding in Atlanta to charge the guy with murder. And if he doesn't get charged with murder, then you know what's going to happen is they're going to tear that city apart here in the next few days. Atlanta's going to have one bitch of a weekend next weekend because they're supposed to rule on that in the next couple of days. You know that, right? That's what's going to happen to that Rayshard Brooks. What's happening is here is they're taking the point of law and policing out of the hands of these people. And I know I've been seeing reports in the last days that they're quitting in droves right now. I mean, they just don't want the job and they're retiring early. And how can you blame the cops? I mean, they want out of this thing and you're not going to have recruits coming in. We're setting this stuff up for really a bad situation 10 years from now, don't you think?
Well, I think we're setting it up for a bad situation 6 months from now. You do away with all the undercover cops, and how are you going to gather intelligence on anybody?
Exactly.
What are you going to do? You're going to use more microphones and cameras. I think the Black community, writ large, is aware that in spite of the noise that's being made by this radical group who's making a lot of noise, that the police officers in general are the things that are keeping the thugs from taking advantage of them. Yeah. And it seems to me like it's self-destructive for community policing not to occur in these Black communities and to not have people who are undercover who can follow up on some of the worst crimes, because Black on Black crime is the true problem here.
Well, it is. And we preach that all the time. I mean, and there are two types of Black leaders. You have your Sharpton kind of guy who was at the funeral there at Floyd, taking advantage of another opportunity, screaming his brains out at the service there at Floyd in Texas, it was, yeah. And you have that sort of leader. And there's a certain amount of them, race baiters and civil unrest. They're not, they're not about civil discourse. I mean, it's civil unrest. So then you've got the Black leaders who do know what you just said, Jim, that they're aware of what's happening with the numbers and the stats that we preach all the time. But a lot of this in context is crossed up and confused and manipulated by the media. Now, you got to remember, a lot of people don't study this stuff like we do. And they don't know the stats. And all the stats you just talked about a moment ago are all factual. It's about 13% of the Black American population. And like you say, more than 50% of the crime. And they know that. And they know the important role police have. But it's the others in the community that are flaming this stuff and are doing this. And, you know, I got to tell you, I got to confess something to you, Jim. And this is not going to sound nice, but it is a confession I will make right now, because I've been hoping in the last last few days, as I see the country unraveling here, I've been hoping and thinking that I'm hoping for a couple of, I'd like to see a couple of incidents consecutively and very, just happened, bing, 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 where a Black officer shoots and kills a white person. And I've been hoping that we could get that would happen. Now, that's a sad thing to hope for, but I've been hoping I could see that to show the disparity of Black and white that you just talked a moment earlier about here, and to see how that would get it if we could push that out into the media, that narrative, and say, see, there's another form. Is that your form of racism as well? Do we have, at what point do we get to the point to become honest adults in the room and say, this has got nothing to do with Black and white, really? I mean, is that what it will take?
Well, And let me interrupt there for a second, because there is another piece to that statistic.
Okay.
Black perpetrators are most often shot by Black cops and Hispanic cops, not by white cops.
Right.
But there is an interesting sort of wrinkle that is hard to explain. So you have a police stop, right? That study, the empirical analysis of racial differences in police use of force that I talked about, one of the results of that study was that, white folks had a higher probability of being shot. But the other one was that with less lethal uses of force, Black folks were more likely to be roughed up by the cops. And so the question is, I think that is the visible part of the thing, that the roughing up of it, because my impression is that there's a large group of people, white and Black, who do not know how to act when a policeman pulls them over, that they believe that they have the obligation to resist arrest. And
by today's standards, that's true. Absolutely.
Right. And what happens is, as a man by the name of Sam Harris pointed out in an excellent podcast, although I completely disagree with everything he says about Trump, I do agree with his review of this particular problem. So I'm not endorsing his views about Trump. I think he's suffering from Trump derangement syndrome. But in terms of this particular problem, one of the things that has to happen is young people have to understand that once a policeman decides to arrest you, it is not negotiable. And what you'd best do is cooperate, get to the police precinct, ask for a lawyer, and then scream at the police or do whatever you're going to do. The time to do it isn't when you're wrestling with him, on the back, because they will use lethal force to protect themselves.
But Jim, that's the problem, what you're talking about right now. There's the rubber in the road right there, because the people out on the streets right now, and the media has presented the case, Jim, that it is negotiable. They've done the direct opposite of what you just said. They are reporting that it is negotiable. The police are out of control. They have no right to be doing this. They are the thugs, not the criminals, Jim. Come on. And that's what's being reported. And so the people are watching this stuff, and they're seeing the headlines, and they know what's happening. And now they believe they can negotiate it, and they know that it's going to be a firestorm. And even though their little son, like Rayshard, might be a criminal, and he might be doing some bad things, and he might be resisting arrest, and he might be grabbing the officer's taser, and he might be shooting at the that boy is a good boy otherwise, Jim. And he had every reason to negotiate the arrest with the police officer. Now you pulled law enforcement right out of the hands of policing, and where are we?
Well, hopefully the vast majority of the Black community and the white community don't see it that way. Our problem, and you mentioned it earlier, one of the main problems we have is that, you know, is the press, and that the press has taken one or two. If you think that there's 50 million times that the police are going to be stopping and talking with civilians, and 10 million times that they're going to be doing arrests, like Sam Harris pointed out, there's going to be occasionally something like we have just witnessed, you know, that is caught on videotape. And we shouldn't be surprised that those things happen because of the distribution of the numbers, not because of inherent racism, you know. And so part of our problem is that things are interpreted as being racist when they're not. You know, I was a long-haired guy. I'm 68 years old. In the 1960s, I had long hair. And I have had cops stop me for no reason at all, have me stand out in the rain while they gave me a hard time. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think they were being racist, but I think if I was Black, I might have thought they were being racist. You know, I've had them pull me over for absolutely no reason so that they could just check my car, you know, and it just...
Well, Jim, they do profile people. We all have to profile. I mean, there's another point to make here, Jim, where racism is or isn't, and then profiling, because you know what I'm talking about as a guy that understands terror. We have to profile, don't we?
We do. And I think the reason that particular cop pulled me out of, I was standing at a 7-Eleven talking to my soon to be wife at that particular time. It was pouring rain, but I had been there talking to her for about an hour and a half on the phone. He probably thought I was dealing drugs or something, you know? Yeah. So he pulled me over, but that's the adult Jim looking back at that. You know, the young Jim who was out there making that phone call to my fiance thought, you know, he's pulling me out because I got long hair. Yeah. He just wants to hassle me. And I think that what happens is our responses to these things very often tell us more about how we view the world than it does about the circumstances and the reasons that people actually pull us out.
Yeah.
If we view the world through a lens where everything that is questionable is interpreted as racism, then we're going to see racism everywhere.
Oh, we do
but
see
it's not it. That... necessarily the case that racism is there, but whether that's what we're interpreting on it. And there may well be some racist things. And I personally believe there is systemic racism, as you know from our previous conversation, but it may not be in the police department. I think it's in the Democratic Party. You know, they're the ones who have been in charge of these cities and precincts with this for years, for decades, for sometimes 50, 60 years. Yeah. And what happens is there's this sort of unrest that's created by the press and by what they're saying. And then they come in and claim that they're the solution to the crisis that they created.
That's it.
You know, I mean, who is it that telling Black people that they have no opportunity, that they're not skilled enough, that they're not bright enough, that people have to provide them with a living wage gratis simply because they're not able to do that on their own. Who is it that gets hurt by that? The people that get hurt by that are the Black folks who believe for an instant that the Democrats are going to do anything for them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you just opened my eyes again when you said the systemic racism. You know, I've gone along, I don't experience racism in my own life or people around me. I don't associate with people who are, so I don't really know. And I would speak about it in my world. It does not exist for the people that I hang with and whatever it is in my life. But you're right when you mention the Democrat leaders and the purveyors of the party and the others that are using racism. And it really is. People, what they're all using, the political people, is it's profiling is what we're talking about here, what I'm talking about anyway. So it really is profiling, but it's to the nth degree, you see. And I mean, call it whatever you want, profiling, racism, whatever the case may be. But the point is that the political operatives at the head of the party use it very conveniently to get what they want. And they use it to push their agenda forward here. Jim brings up some good points there. With racism and the, as he said, systemic racism probably does exist and potentially it does. I don't know. But, you know, one time I have to tell you the story. I thought I was being called out as well. Jim, you mentioned when you had long hair as a young lad and you were being called out from the cops or whatever, you know. And I kind of felt the same way myself when I was about that age. Now, I didn't have long hair, but I thought they were, you know, profiling me as well when I was driving 93, 94 miles an hour up the interstate like a young fool. And I thought, well, what the hell are they picking on me? I can't figure it out, people, huh? We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. James Mitchell.
The silent majority has spoken. We say, let the silent voices be heard. You can be the voice of change. Contact our producer at liberty@americaoutloud.com. liberty@americaoutloud.com.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, healthycell.com/sleep.
I mean, when you look at me again, what kind of a thought comes to your mind? You profile me? Come on now, right? We all do that stuff, man. That's why I got that ticket driving 93, 94 as a kid, as a young lad up the interstate, right? So there's something to that. I want to talk about where the money is coming from to fund this. Really, it is domestic terror now. And there are two points that worry me, Jim. And one is, as we've been talking about here, is going to be that red line, which you really haven't addressed. And I do want you to address it because I think the president is wrong to make the statements that he's making. And unless he's going to take action, I think he needs to stay out of it. To make these statements, whether via in press conferences or on Twitter, unless you're going to take action, don't draw the line and say what you're going to do. And I think that just fuels the situation. I love your strategy earlier about fencing the place off and, you know, cutting off the, yeah, that's all good. I could support that in a hot second there. And then nobody gets killed. And then, you know, arrest them when they come out, whoever the perpetrators are. But let's talk about the terror. What we're talking about here is there's a lot of criminalization in the country, Jim. Now, you follow this stuff. You talk about it. We've discussed the southern border before. We've talked about a lot of the criminals coming in. You have international terror. You have domestic terrorism. But we're talking about the likes of people. There's a lot of money I've read a multiple of reports now of where this is being funded, these people, the Antifa groups, the Black Lives Matter group, which these are radical groups here now. This is, you know, and then a lot of it, they say, is coming from the American Hayden, George Soros, of course. His name comes up frequently enough. But also you got Barack Obama and his OFA, Organizing for America. And then you got the Islamic elements, ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, CARE. All these folks are looking at this sort of thing as an opportunity. Talk to us at this moment about how these, what your thoughts are about funding these domestic groups, because they're definitely busting them in and they are being paid in a lot of these cases as they are trying to get into Portland right now, as I say, in Nashville as well. And now you got Atlanta. These are all hotbeds they're looking for. What is your concern for that with terror money, these groups? How do they fund the domestic terrorists? Shine a light there.
Well, if the undercover videos that I've seen are accurate, it sounds like some of these groups are paying people to come in and actually engage in violent behavior. And they're guaranteed so much money if they can engage in violent behavior. And they're also guaranteed that somebody will pay their bail to get them out. And hopefully, you know, I mean, I'm looking at it from their perspective. Hopefully they think the person either won't be charged or they'll be able to hide out and leave the state. Nobody will go after them. My personal belief is that you have to take away the anonymity of what these folks are doing. And if you want to make this thing go away, you're going to have to specifically identify who the funding sources are and make that known publicly, you know. And part of the problem is that, you remember, these kids that are doing this actually believe that they're the heroes of the story. And they believe that in part because of the way the press controls information that's available, the way most of the media, the mainstream media, controls the availability of information. When my book came out, none of the mainstream media people wanted to book me. And when I asked my publicity agent about it, she said, well, that's because they don't want you to get your message out. And so that's what's happening, is you're getting the replaying of two or three relatively rare events in terms of the police shootings of these mm-hmm. unarmed black men over and over and over, with the press fanning the flames and no pushback in any sort of way that corrects the misperception or presents the alternative point of view. You know, they're not playing every 10 minutes videos of black looters kicking people in the face or shooting somebody or doing something like that. So you get a one-sided view of that. And remember, the mainstream media isn't giving you the facts. They're telling you what they want you to think. And they're doing that in the polls, and they're doing that with their normal media broadcasts. So, you know, when somebody like you or somebody like me points out the error in their claim, it's considered hate speech. And when we object to the rioting and the looting and the destruction, it's considered racist. And when you look at this funding, Black Lives Matter should go to their website and read what they're about. If you substituted the word white for the word black, what you would see, or Asian for the word black, you would see that basically it's the Klan. They want to create a world that is controlled by blacks, according to the Black Lives Matter movement. When it's presented on their website, it's it's a little bit like the Orwellian notion about all the farmyard animals are equal, but some are more equal, yeah. You know, and that's the problem. And our industry folks are too coward to push back against this. I read somewhere that something like $1 billion has been promised to Black Lives Matter, you know. And my experience as a behavioral psychologist is that if you give a puppy a cookie for peeing on the rug, you're going to get a lot of wet rugs. And if what you do in response to these riots and things where things are destroyed is you give them extra money and you give them money to fund that stuff, then what they're going to learn is that's the way that they go about getting those funds. And you're likely to see an increase in violence, not a decrease in violence. That they are not going to give you a pass because there is never enough. Never enough. And at some point, you have to stand up to the mob and you have to, you know, you're going to have to make public. I mean, one of the reasons the Klan fell apart was because they started making public who the members of the Klan were and what their secret words were and what their secret handshake was. And people began to laugh at them. And so, in my view, the way you cut the funds off to this thing is you, I mean, we have companies, big companies supporting Black Lives Matter who themselves are then funneling that money into racist operations that create violence and destruction. How in the world is killing a Black man or destroying a Black family's life dream or destroying a Black neighborhood in response to a killing that may be questionable and the person probably should be prosecuted for doing it? How is that correcting racism? It's not. It's not. It's just a way to grab power. And so what you end up with is you end up with this situation where there's a lot of money coming into it because they want to feel good about themselves and they don't want to have the haters turn on them. They just don't want to have it. And so they try to bribe their way out of it, but that money gets used to spread the violence and the discontent.
How do you think the president is handling things thus far with all of this? Serious question.
Well, let me put, you know, you had said earlier that you didn't think that he should make threats. And in general, I believe you shouldn't make a promise you don't intend to keep, and you shouldn't make a threat you don't intend to keep. I mean, that's the way I've lived my entire life. But I want you to imagine a situation where the president says nothing at all, and then all of a sudden the 82nd Airborne parachutes into that space in Seattle and a bunch of people get hurt. What do you think the reaction to that would be? Mm-hmm. There was absolutely nothing he can do that wouldn't be misconstrued or properly construed in some points as some kind of a fascist act.
I agree with you, but let me ask you this. Let me throw this at you. So why doesn't he sit and really point out, without the inflammatory language, why doesn't he say, I mean, or have a press conference, get on this, talk to America, talk to Americans, and tell people that, listen, you have a governor out there, Governor Inslee, and speak respectfully, Jim, and say Governor Jay Inslee needs to get the state of Washington under control. And Mayor Jenny Durkan, the Democrat mayor of Seattle, needs to, and they need to take, why doesn't he just respectfully call them out in a way that consistently does that without calling them names, but also without drawing lines? If you don't do it, I'm going to do it. If you don't do it, I will do this. If you don't, I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do, but I'm going to do it. I'm getting the feeling that's not an approach that's going to be a win for him. And I agree with what you say. Anything he's going to do to that situation is going to put us in a bad spot, especially with the military and the confrontation he just had with them over the last couple of weeks, Jim. It's not a pretty scene.
I think the reason, most people don't understand that when Trump negotiates, he uses a thing called anchoring effects.
I understand.
First position is outrageous. And it's, in a lot of cases, over the top. And he just habitually does that. So some of what you're seeing is that.
Exactly.
Another thing that he very frequently does, I think, is because he's ultimately from, I think he's from the Bronx, is he talks like somebody from the Bronx. You know, and that's one of the things I think that endears him to some people. Nobody thinks that tomorrow night he's going to send in the 82nd Airborne or the Marine Force to clear that thing out. But it is true that if they don't do something in Seattle, eventually the federal government will have to. I mean, there are people whose lives are being ruined by the fact that they can't get to their stores, that they can't get to their homes, that they can't do the normal course of business, and yet that city is going to expect them to pay taxes and going to expect them to pay for police support and expect them to pay for transportation and roads and all that sort of stuff. And that's completely wrong. Now, that may be a states' rights issue. I'm not a constitutional lawyer. I don't know. And if I were one of those people who couldn't get to my business because the state is allowing, Washington state is allowing this situation to continue in Seattle, I would sue them.
Yeah.
I would sue them in court for not allowing, for keeping me from access to my business, to my home, to, you know, to my livelihood.
Yeah.
But by allowing these shenanigans to continue.
Here's the last point we make here is this here. I agree with what you say there. I understand it. You understand it. Probably a lot of other listeners probably understand Trump's strategy. We know what the art of the deal is, and the anchoring impact, the effect that you just speak about is an accurate, true statement. I totally get it. For me, this is not a problem personally. I have no issue with it. I'd have no issue the way the president handles this. What concerns me is the way that that rich red meat is consistently given to the media elites to sabotage the agenda and puts them against the media elite, the media heads, the military heads. And it creates a problem in the even if it's just a facade, Jim, it creates a problem that a piece of, and the question is, here's the gamble in all of this, Jim. What percentage of America is paying attention? What percentage of America understands the president's strategy? Or what percentage of America thinks he is a buffoon? That's the question, isn't it?
I don't know. You know, I have a very different reaction to this. I think that every day that mess continues in Seattle, it's an unpaid for ad for President Trump.
Hmm.
You know, I think that seeing more and more videos on Twitter of black people saying that they're tired of being this stuff going on. Hmm. Because it's not black folks that are holding those businesses down. It's Antifa folks. Right. And that what they've done is they've hijacked this movement. You know, there are legitimate concerns about reforming the police department. There are things that need to be done to reduce the probability of violence. What they don't tell you is it's been going down every year for years,
yeah.
You know? So I think that there are some legitimate concerns, but that it's being hijacked. And we started to talk about this in the beginning, and I will just get this out real quick.
Okay.
This is not the first time that leftists have tried to take control of the United States by using some kind of a naturally occurring thing. There were socialists who tried to do it in the 1912s. The communists tried to do it in the 1917 to 1922. The communists tried to do it again from 38 to about 44. And then they tried it again. The leftists tried it again in the 60s. So this happens where you have these folks who want to impose a socialist, communist, political country by taking over America. But I have a lot of faith in Americans.
That's the question right there. That's the point right there. I mean, in other words, the Floyd thing was a spark, right? I mean, that sparked the whole thing.
It wasn't even a spark. It wasn't a spark. Here's the point to remember. They are looking for something that they can leverage.
Exactly. No, that's exactly.
It's not a spark as much as it is an opportunity.
Oh, well, that is the opportunity. But no, that was the incident, spark, whatever the hell you want to call it. But that was the thing that tipped it over. Are you confident? You just laid out some historical moments there. So, you know, all right, we have faith in the American people. And, you know, again, back to this whole argument. So are you comfortable this is just another blip on the screen? Or do you think we're pushing our luck a little bit?
Well, I think that if they push, if the socialists and the leftists push this too far, then the same thing's going to happen that happened in the 20s and 30s. You know, the Justice Department rounded up tens of thousands of socialists, put them in jail or deported them. You know, there's only so far that the government can allow this thing to pursue before it begins to challenge our way of life. You know, and I think that the reason I have a lot of faith in Americans is because our country was founded on the notion that we're created equal regardless of our race, and that our individual rights are more important than the collective rights of the state. And when there are those people like the ones in Antifa, and to a large extent, Black Lives Matter, who want to come in and impose it in a different way, I think ordinary Americans of every race will reject that.
Well, I certainly hope you're right.
They will reject it at some point. That doesn't mean it won't be violent, but there will be a rejection. It will happen.
Yeah.
And so the question is, how do we tiptoe through the minefield until this thing gets to the point? Because basically we're being subjective to extortion, aren't we? Basically they're saying the only thing holding us back from destroying minority neighborhoods and attacking residential areas is if the officials give in to our demands. And our demands are that all criminals be released and that our borders be done and no policemen ever, and that we get an independent salary for life without ever having to do any work. It's extortion. And at some point, the federal government will say, enough is enough.
Yeah.
And I think it's wise of Trump to say, just so that they know, there's only so much of this we're going to tolerate.
Interesting.
You need to do something.
Yeah.
And it is the state's problem. It is the state's problem. Unless there are people crossing the border from another state to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these people are completely ignorant of the sorts of things that are likely happening down there in Chaz. If they think that their phones are not being monitored, if they think that they're not undercover people in there, if they think that they're not being tracked and profiled and identified and cross-checked, they are fools.
Yeah. I wondered that, what you just said. I gave that some thought earlier, actually. I'm sure they got listening devices in there and all of it. I mean, obviously, this was an area they occupied there with the police and the officials, government officials, you know. Dr. Mitchell gives us quite a bit to think about there. I like some of the strategy of what he said about Washington. I hope people are paying attention is what I'm praying for. I appreciate him always being honest, as he always is, a man of integrity. But pushing back, too, about the president is a good thing. I hope he's making the right moves. I hope so. But the question, we're going to know very soon, and I'll tell you why. November is going to be a very interesting moment of time. It's going to be, and for a few reasons. One is, how much of the black vote does he win? How much of black America stands up and is tired of this, as Jim just says, right? How many are? Well, we're going to know in November, people, you see, if they're onto the charade or not. Now, we're going to know a lot in November. This is, beyond anything, a tale of times here coming up. I'm telling you, November 3rd, it's going to be something else. And really something else to study the numbers and where people voted and why they did. Where does America really want to take the country? As the president says, he's a law and order president, right? It worries me, of course, with the media element, and the more red meat you give them, the more posturing it puts in the air. And I don't want to see the military leaders against the president. And even if it's just public parade, I don't want to see that, people. It's not healthy for us. It's not a good place for America to be. It worries me. And so what we've got to do is we've got to nip whatever's happening here. I don't disagree with Jim also almost with the fact that maybe it could very well be right. Every day that goes by, every week with the Washington-Seattle situation, it may not be such a bad thing for him. But I don't necessarily disagree with that. Dependent if it doesn't get into other cities and become a runaway train, because these Marxists are looking for these opportunities. That's the problem. Like he said it, Jim said it, opportunities. When, you know, you have the incident or what I reference as the spark, but the incident, whatever it might be, that's all it takes. And the opportunity is right there. That's what they're looking for. And they take advantage of it. What we've got to do, people, is appeal to middle America. We need to get to the people. And again, I beg you always to please invite your independent friends, your Democrat friends, those are just in the middle aisle for sure. And just a little left of center, maybe the Blue Dogs. Those are the people you want to invite here to the Voice of a Nation and to America Out Loud. Those are the people we need to reach, not the extremists. We're not going to get the far left, and we're not going to get the far right either, because they're all lunatics at that point, you see. We got to stay right where America needs to be. And that's what I need you to help us with out there, is bring them to the show, bring them to the platform. And let them see what we're doing, because that's what America is, and that's where we stand tall, which is what Dr. Mitchell's talking about right there. Well, friends, thank you for being here with me on the mission here, on the Voice of a Nation here. Hey, by the way, we just celebrated 1 year anniversary for the show here, for the Voice of a Nation, the fight of good versus evil. We just kicked off again, and we'll stay on it here and put up the good fight every day here. Thanks again to Dr. James Mitchell. Friends, it's time to get involved and get loud.